You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06 on this Tuesday morning, March 18th. Coming up, well, more than we expected, because Dan Hagen couldn't join us in the last segment. He's on vacation here. And we get this note from Hans Breitenmoser saying he feels awful for Dan having to lie on that beach. Would we like him as a guest? Yes, we would. So we'll talk to Hans, pinch hitting for Dan, coming up a little later on this hour. We've got a lot of ground to cover, everything from Derek Van Orden referring to this little endeavor as a clown show, to a bill that Assembly Republicans are going to be passing today that micromanages sheriff's departments around Wisconsin and puts racial profiling above public safety. But first, what a messy day could lie ahead of us as early as 24 hours from now. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot here to tell us about another storm system moving in, because what do I say, kids? Winter doesn't go away until it breaks you.
I was going to say, because God has forsaken us, but that's fine. We'll go with yours. It's good.
Wow. Well, God's forsaken you. He won't let you enjoy coconut. So, yes.
True.
Honestly, the comment section is still just going wild with coconut wars. So we can't even, we won't even. There's winter coming back again.
And
Brittany's got to tell us about that. Brittany, tell us about the stuff that falls like flaky white coconut upon us all tomorrow.
Oh, that was a good transition there.
Thank you.
I'll give you that one. Yes. Okay. All right. So we do have that winter storm watch that went out last night, all the way from Eau Claire to Wausau to Rhinelander, north to Ashland to Rice Lake, all the way over to Minneapolis. And that same exact area is probably looking at a hefty 7 to 11 inches of snowfall. And of course, this is going to start moving its way in through the overnight hours tonight into early tomorrow morning. That's when everything's really going to start, ramps up throughout the afternoon, and then it starts to dissipate as we go into the evening and late night hours. So it's going to be an all-day event for the Northwoods, getting hit with heavy, wet, slushy type of snow. Our temperatures are going to be in those low 30s, so it is going to be that wet, sloppy kind of snowfall where it does ice over pretty quickly as that cold front comes through on Wednesday night and into our Thursday. That is when the rest of the state is going to see rain switch over to snow. So this will start on Wednesday afternoon and into those evening hours before the system kicks on out of here and is done for our Thursday. We'll actually see some sunshine, but obviously be in the cooler temperatures too for Thursday. We actually have another system headed our way too, but let's get through this one first because the winds are going to be vicious too, gusting around 40 to potentially 50 miles per hour. And when you have those big, wet, heavy flakes and they kind of all are falling heavy at once and those winds on top of it, that's what creates whiteout conditions. So it's going to be very hard to drive out there. And of course, the roads are just going to be pretty terrible as we go through this system.
Happy first day of spring on Thursday, everybody.
Yay!
As winter spends its last full official day going, oh yeah? I ain't done with you yet. Good morning from Tigerton, writes Rob. It's partly cloudy, 40 degrees with a nice pink sunrise this morning. Yesterday went to the Clintonville to pick up my snowblower at Adam's Small Engine. Had supper at the Clintonville A&W, one of my favorite restaurants around. Looks like March madness of weather will continue with the Wednesday snowstorm for some of us. Could we have another snowstorm on Sunday?
Yep.
I don't know what Rob is trying to get out of on Sunday, but he's already making requests to get out of it, whatever it is.
Oh, I know. We are just the target of a couple storms. So, yes, this is just one of the 1-2 punch.
Yikes. More. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is there any snow that will be heading southern statewide, or is it heading north?
That one, actually, the second one looks like it wants to hit southern parts of the state at this moment. But obviously, even this one today, the track is still shifting. It doesn't know if it would rather target the Northwoods or La Crosse and Wausau area. So they're iffy. But that one, Sunday, southern parts of the state, heads up.
You'll have to stay tuned for the nowcast on that one.
Yep.
Which is when it's actually happening here. to previous conversations, and you know, Greg was talking about just how lovely it is to just be home.
Yep.
Sometimes Alicia's saying, home is my favorite place. The dog greetings, the dog attacks, you know, when they attack you with love when you get home. Those are the best. Cassandra writes in, a house is not a home without a doggo. We kind of adopted the neighbor's dog yesterday.
Nice.
Does the neighbor know that?
Yes, it's an older couple, and the dog is a puppy and is very spirited, shall we say, and was you know, looking to be a handful. And we thought, you know what that dog needs is a good long walk, you know, to get tuckered out. And, you know, our neighbors, God bless them, they're not going to take the dog on a long walk. And so we said, can we do that? Because we could use a little bit more exercise. And we did. And I'll tell you what. After a mile, that dog who was just so like, I'm jumping all over you. Yeah. I'm jumping all over you. Can we go home now?
Yeah.
And I'm betting our neighbors had a much quieter night than they have had for some time. And we got some exercise in. So we're like, okay, you're kind of our dog now after work. We'll take you for a walk.
You want to knock that out real quick? Find yourself a good dog park in your area. Mm-hmm. Let the dog get out like 20, 30 minutes and... It'll be asleep in the back of your car.
If you live in an area with a dog park, it's great. And there is one in Chippewa Falls, you know, not too terribly far away from here. And it helps. But this dog, much like the dog that we had for many years, never quite properly trained. In other words, if it sensed that leash was off, the dog park is basically the entire farm field across the street. And it will run all the way across that field. Into the barn, roll around in some silage juices and whatever else is on the floor of the barn, and maybe then come home. So
silage juices, okay.
Big fan of the dog parks with fences when they work.
Absolutely.
I wondered if Rob was trying to get out of something. No, Robert.
I was going
to
say.
Snowstorms are money makers for me. That's what we're talking about. All right. Well, good. See, we're all about the revenue streams here for weather.
We're all about the dollar bills,
that's
y'all.
Revenue, yes. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys. You too.
Not a lot to tell you about in sports today because, again, everything's a little bit later on in the week. You've got the NCAA basketball tournament, of course, with the Badger men taking on Montana on Thursday. They'll be playing in Denver. Marquette will be playing on Friday against 10-seed New Mexico. That game will be in Cleveland. And the Bucks start a 5-game road trip against Western Conference teams. They will be in Golden State tonight, Thursday in L.A. against the Lakers, Saturday in Sacramento, next Monday in Phoenix, next Wednesday in Denver. So they won't be home again until Friday of next week. The Badger women's hockey team is in the Final Four. They will be playing the Minnesota Gophers on Friday evening in the Twin Cities. So that's just a little look at sports that's going on now. Let me pick up on a question or a topic that Christina Laurie and I were talking about in the last hour. And that is, yesterday being St. Patrick's Day, we didn't dwell on it too much, but it's been 5 years, folks. 5 years ago on St. Patrick's Day was when the shutdown order came, because it was clear that COVID-19 had arrived and that Wisconsinites were starting to die. This crazy illness that we had no vaccine for, that nobody had any answer for. I mean, I don't even think Ron Johnson was hawking, you know, horse paste yet as a remedy. This was a completely new and terrifying thing. And as some people like to say, last week was the last normal week. And then 5 years ago, everything changed. And so if you would like to share a story of, you know, where you were or what you remember from that time, you can certainly jump in the comment sections, as all kinds of folks are doing now on YouTube and on Facebook. Go to the Up North News YouTube page, the Up North News Facebook page, the Civic Media Facebook page. You can also call or text us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, and what you remember about it. And over at couriernewsroom.com, we have several different columnists who share their work with us, including Melissa Ryan, whose newsletter is called Control-Alt-Right-Delete, and tracking the rise of right-wing extremism. And she talks about it being the last normal week and where it all went wrong from that moment onward. She writes, Trump's presidency and the MAGA movement that supports him undoubtedly made the pandemic worse for Americans. He was unable and unwilling to unify us in the way that we expect an American president to do when faced with a global crisis. He was also unable and unwilling to use the pandemic preparation plan created by the previous administration. Rather than tap into the federal government's knowledge and institutional memory on public health, Trump's son-in-law sourced research from a Facebook group of ER docs. Trump encouraged the anti-mask protest movement and refused to wear a mask himself most of the time. He refused to advocate all that hard for the vaccine, even though its development was one of the few wins of his administration. Trump wouldn't even follow CDC recommendations in the White House or when he caught the virus. We'll never know how many lives were lost as a result of the Trump administration's negligence and opportunism. And there's much more in Melissa's column as well. You can go to Courier Newsroom and head over to her Control-Alt-Right-Delete column. And it is something that still conjures up strong feelings from many folks. Strong feelings from people who somehow feel like the precautions were some kind of infringement on civil liberties and on their freedom. When we asked people to avoid social contact and to keep the kids home from school because we did not yet know what would be the impact on kids, how easily it could be transmitted from kids to teachers and older staff members at school or to their grandparents. Cassandra writes on YouTube here, it was such a weird time. Our hospital didn't get hit super hard until that fall, but we were always on edge. Then in October, we got slammed and it didn't stop. We went straight into trauma season. And I remember that well, because in our newsletter, we would have the daily totals, number of cases, number of hospitalizations, number of deaths. And it was in the fall when some people were starting to let their guard down, saying, look, it doesn't seem to be that bad. And then, of course, as they started mingling, the number of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths skyrocketed. Thank God for the vaccine and the people who developed it. And I will never stop being grateful to those folks, just as I will never stop carrying their flag now that the funding for research and development and humanitarian aid and everything else is being cut by the same guy who led to God only knows how many deaths starting 5 years ago this week. Back after this. You're Up North.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Again, Adam Levine is 46 years old. You can catch our history lesson every morning at 6:50, Monday through Friday, on Up North News Radio. We'll certainly be on the lookout for other COVID takes that come in from 5 years ago, but I will address this text from Mark in Sussex, who writes, okay, snowflake, more people died under Biden. Trump fast-tracked the vaccine. Yes, Trump fast-tracked the vaccine, and then inexplicably started to buy into the vaccine denial. But the more people died under Biden thing, yeah, true. Know why? Complacency and callousness, accelerated by that same guy who fast-tracked the vaccine. Greg, you said you were listening in. It was in the room next door to you, but we haven't talked yet about Brittany Kinzer's interview with us on Friday.
Yeah.
And then he was on with Earl Ingram, or she was on with Earl Ingram yesterday.
Yeah.
And I know folks definitely got the impression during our interview on Friday that she wasn't exactly looking to answer the questions. And when I tried to steer her back to the question, especially the cost of voucher schools, she simply accused me of, you know, wanting to interrupt her and mm-hmm. let her finish her point. But the point never came back to how we can financially sustain two school systems in the state. Did you catch anything on Earl's show that might have illuminated that further?
As far as I know, no. I was prepping for Matt Nair on Air when she was on, but from what I gleaned from other people, they said that she was not doing her best to answer questions as well. And I just want to say this, too, and Dan made the point, and you made the point, too, thanking her for being on Civic Media at all, because it had been easy to not be here. But she came on and just didn't really give the reasons why she wants to be the head of the DPI. And I think that's an important thing to throw down there, because that's an important job. You're talking about how many children in this, I think 800,000 children in the public school system. And if you can't answer why two revenue streams isn't a good idea, then I don't know why we should be voting for that person then.
There is no doubt that she is a staunch and strong advocate for kids and for charter schools and for private schools and to give people a choice. And to be clear, and we have been very clear about this, if you choose to send your kid to a private school, to a charter school, whatever, that's great. That's great. You have that freedom to do that. But I'm always going to advocate tirelessly for the local public school in your neighborhood, mm-hmm. wherever your neighborhood is. And you can't have the strongest schools possible if we're diverting public taxpayer money to private schools. Mm-hmm. If you want to go to a private school, great. If you want to apply for scholarships like crazy.
Yeah.
You know, depend on the benevolence of others for your children's education. Don't come to the taxpayers for that. We've got a school system.
You know? No, I agree, and it's hard to see. You know. I live in Kenosha. We had a referendum on our ballot for the primary, and I don't have children. I don't have anyone in my life who's in school, at least a public school. And I voted yes because I want those schools to be the best as possible. And the people of Kenosha said no, and I understand why. So, once again, how are you going to fix that? And kudos to her for her mission. She's like, I want children to learn to read. I'm like, that's great. I want children to learn to read, but that is not the overarching problem to be, you know, that's a smaller problem in the overall problem that we're facing right now. And
yeah.
She wasn't able to answer those questions for you. And when she got to the point where she was accusing you of interrupting her,
yes,
that became frustrating because it was like, it's a simple question. It is a very
simple
question.
Yeah, and we only have so much time. So yeah. we wanted to get to much more than we were able to, but she did come on and talk about her candidacy, which, again, we are very appreciative of. Early voting starts today for the elections. The elections are 2 weeks from today on April 1st, and early in-person absentee ballot voting is now underway at your local clerk's office. Your local clerk is the one who decides the availability, the hours, the times, and so you really should go to your local city clerk, town clerk, find out what the hours are. If you don't know how to reach that local clerk, I'll tell you who does: the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And they have a site, myvote.wi.gov, where among the many things that it can do, voter registration, what's on your ballot, polling locations, but it will also, you put in your address, it'll connect you right to, this is your local clerk. Here's how you reach your local clerk to find out how to go vote before April 1st. Which I always try to do all the time. And so you could as well. And that way it won't be overlooked on April 1st for that election for state superintendent and that big election for Wisconsin State Supreme Court. Speaking of that, let's see, Donald Trump Jr. was in Oconomowoc yesterday, stumping for Brad Schimmel in his race for Wisconsin Supreme Court. Again, ostensibly a nonpartisan race, but in name only. And Don Jr. talking all about basically what folks on the progressive side have been saying, that this is a referendum on Elon Musk and Donald Trump. Don Jr. did not shy away from that at all and said, you know, this is essentially another presidential election in the sense that, you know, Brad Schimmel is going to carry water for Donald Trump on things that may come up, like, you know, election results and whether to respect them or not. And there was a photo making the rounds on social media, Greg, of Brad Schimmel and others standing under, like, what was it, a 40-foot inflatable Donald Trump?
A giant Trump.
A giant parade balloon size. Yeah. And Brad Schimmel saying that he could be impartial if Donald Trump were to come before him, said the guy who posed under a 40-foot inflatable Donald Trump.
This coming from a party who was very upset when Mark Zuckerberg was donating money to help run elections smoother. They don't have a problem with this money coming in. They're okay with this.
Yes. So again, always just be considering the source. Mm-hmm. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz will be in Eau Claire today. That is somewhat related to the elections, but also to basically tweak Derek Van Orden, one of the many Republican members of Congress who aren't holding any kind of a genuine town hall, aren't really answering questions completely in teletown halls, aren't answering questions completely when talking to local reporters, and instead accusing the reporters of lying. And so when we called out Derek Van Orden yesterday about that, if you missed it earlier, he reposted an excerpt from our radio show on his social media to call us clowns and say we don't understand the definition of gaslighting, and he put in the definition of gaslighting. So go to Derek Van Orden's social media, look at a clip from our show, look at the definition of gaslighting, and tell us who you think is right. Hans Brighton Moser is coming up next. You're up north. One song this day in 1978 by the Bee Gees. Coming up on 7:35 on this Tuesday morning on Up North News Radio, I'm Pat Kreitlow here in Chippewa Falls, Greg Bach and Racine. And somewhere on the road right now is our friend Hans Brighton Moser, who's normally on the farm out there near Merrill, joins us occasionally on Tuesdays to talk about rural matters of one type or another. And I've got a couple things to talk to him about today. But he is joining us on the road with his hands at 10 and 2 on the wheel, I trust, Mr. Brighton Moser. Good morning. How are you?
Absolutely. Good morning, Pat.
Good. Good to hear. Where are your travels taking you these days?
So I'm headed to Pewaukee, Wisconsin today for National Farmers Organization two-day annual conference.
Oh, okay. I have a sense of what the big topics will be, but why don't you fill in the blanks? I'm sure there's a few things you guys can talk about while you're all together.
Yeah, so National Farmers Organization is, as the name would suggest, an organization of farmers all across the nation, and they're kind of a marketing organization. So we sell our milk to national farmers, and then that milk ends up at a Sartori cheese plant to make cheese. But National Farmers markets milk, grain, and advocates and has been advocating for farmers and sort of farm gate prices for years and years and years. And so this is their annual conference, and this is the first time I've ever gone to one. And one of the people that will be speaking to us is Mike Stranz from National Farmers Union, talk about what's happening in Washington and so forth. And so, yeah, of course, a lot of the conversations, will be, centered around all the chaos that's coming out of the White House with regard to tariffs and, frozen funds and thawed out funds and refrozen funds and deportation and all the fun stuff that we're getting thrown at us.
Fun stuff is an interesting way of putting it. Yes. So we started out the program by talking about a report and analysis in the New York Times, and then I've written it up, and you can find it over at upnorthnewswi.com, noting that the Times looked at all of the retaliatory tariffs coming from Canada, from the European Union, from China, and where Trump has been doing a lot of across-the-board tariffs, you know, like 20% on all goods from China or 25% on all steel and aluminum from Canada. The response from the other countries is much more specific, much more targeted, targeting Trump in swing states, and Wisconsin, of course, being the swingiest of them. And Wisconsin is at the top of the list in terms of the highest percentage of our total jobs being in industries that are targeted by these retaliatory tariffs. The other 49 states, those retaliatory tariffs will hit industries that employ 1 to 8% of the state's labor force. In Wisconsin, nearly 10% of the workforce is in areas that are going to be hit by these retaliatory tariffs. It just, I mean, you understand it. And I think that we're going to find a lot more of our friends and neighbors who think it's just something that happens to somebody else and are going to be in for a rude awakening if this drags on.
Oh, yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. And it is, I think Wisconsin is in a unique position because of what we do here and what we grow here and produce here and so forth. But yeah, I mean, if you're in ag, you're going to be in the crosshairs of retaliatory tariffs, because what a lot of Wisconsin exports, and certainly what a lot of the United States exports, are agricultural products. So, you know, those are things that these other countries can target. And I said for years that, you know, these trade wars, they tend not to do any good for anybody. I do sincerely believe that we have to, you know, protect our own interests and, you know, be genuinely concerned about what, you know, how much we're buying versus how much we're selling and so forth. Absolutely 100% true. But I also feel like these things, these trade, you know, relationships have to be mutually beneficial. And I keep coming back to the idea of, you know, some of this stuff with Canada and Mexico, for example. These are the same trade agreements that the president himself came up with the last time he was in office. And now they're the worst thing in the world. And by God, we got to get rid of them because they're super unfair. You're the one that signed these things. What am I missing here?
I'll never, honestly, for all the times that we've talked about national media and double standards and things like that, this is right up there at the top of the list. If this is something that a Joe Biden or a Barack Obama had done, it would be such a much bigger story. Like, why is Joe Biden opposed to the very trade deal that he signed? Did he forget that he signed it or something like that? And Donald Trump's getting a flat out pass on this. And it won't be, unfortunately, until later, like I said, as more Wisconsin folks are either losing jobs or they don't get pay raises because their companies didn't do as much trade. And it just is taking a long time for some folks to connect the dots, but the dots are there and the dots are very real. Now, last time around, what Trump did was add to the national debt by sending out support checks totaling something like $27 billion to keep farmers afloat. Well, what did we actually gain then when all was said and done? But we had Selena Heller talk to Les Danielson, a farmer from near Kadot. And he says, I think that's one of the reasons a lot of farmers like Trump, because they received all of those Trump payments. But, you know, the man who destroys our market really shouldn't be rewarded for using government money, all of which is borrowed, to backfill the farmer's income. And it makes me wonder, Hans, if Les's point is going to carry more weight with more farmers who go, you know, this is the guy that's the reason debt's going up. It's nice to have that check, but I'd rather have a market for my soybeans.
Well, exactly. I mean, historically, farmers would prefer actually good margins to any subsidies that we get, because everybody just, you know, wants to do business. And what I find so hypocritical from the Republican Party is this constant notion that, you know, capitalism uber alles and no government involvement. And then they create a situation where then they're feeling like, oh, now we have to support the farmers with taxpayer dollars. when had they not mismanaged it to begin with, we wouldn't be having the conversation and we would have decent sustainable prices. So, and the other thing again, and at the risk of going down a rabbit trail here, but you know, in none of this conversation are we talking about multinational corporations that you know, corner markets and monopolize things, and nobody in Washington is talking about antitrust legislation. That's if they want to do something for farmers, that's the conversation that should be happening. How can we make sure that there are more markets for us, and we don't have, you know, just a handful of meat packers or a handful of, you know, soybean processors or what have you? That's the real problem. But once again, I feel like, you know, some of this is shiny object, look over here, when in fact, you know, the real problem, you know, they want to keep hidden from us because there are, you know, big donors that are keeping politicians' pockets lined.
Oh, it's absolutely providing cover for corporations. And we note in the story on our website, we quote, Dana Schnipper is a building materials supplier in New York, who told the Associated Press he thinks the tariffs will give American manufacturers cover to raise prices on steel components. Schnipper says, these prices will never come down. Whatever's going to happen, these things will be sticky. And that's something that we definitely notice, is that when you provide that kind of cover, suddenly those temporary price increases, they don't seem to be all that temporary, and that may be exactly where we're going from here, Hans.
I really think so, and it bothers the consumer, and it bothers me as a producer, because you know, all of this is then, inflated prices. And so there's, when you've got inflation already going on and inflation is in the news, it does provide great cover for retailers to say, you know, we can add a few bucks onto that product and nobody's going to blame us. Everybody's going to blame Joe Biden or, you know, some other, you know, nefarious government type deal. But the other thing that people have to understand that are outside the farming community is, you know, dairy farming, for example, is one of the few enterprises where we buy retail and sell wholesale. And so we're already squeezed. And so when our prices are squeezed and our margins are lowered by having lower prices for lack of markets and so forth, that stinks bad enough. But remember, we also buy a lot of stuff made out of steel, a lot of stuff that comes from overseas. And so here we go again, right? We're paying more for the products that we need to produce the product that we produce that is valued, you know, less as a result of losing those markets. So we're feeling it. We're at the risk of, you know, sounding like I'm complaining again. It is a little stressful because we're getting kind of pinched here.
Well, sure, but I mean, again, these are points that have to be made over and over and over again until some folks finally pay attention and say, wait a minute, there might be something to that point. We're talking to Hans Brighton Moser, a dairy farmer from up in Lincoln County. And let me switch gears to something that the Wisconsin Assembly will be taking up today in Madison. And it is a bill that would essentially micromanage county sheriffs when it comes to immigration enforcement. Because right now, county sheriffs in Wisconsin have wide latitude in determining the extent to which they will cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. But that discretion would be taken away if a bill is passed later today by Republicans in the state assembly, and if it were to be signed by the governor, which nobody expects to happen. But this is the kind of thing that they're spending their time and your tax dollars working on today. The bill calls for a 15% reduction in state aid to communities where local law enforcement refuses to carry out the stricter practices sought by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel tried to survey every sheriff in the state and got most of them to respond in one degree or another. And you get this, again, this wide variety of responses from sheriffs, some of whom will say, look, unauthorized immigration is not a criminal offense. No matter how many times Republicans say they're illegal, they've committed a crime, unauthorized immigration is a civil violation. And yet that's where they want to put all of our resources. And yet you have other sheriffs who have indicated not only do they ask about immigration information at things like traffic stops, but if they come across a crime victim who is undocumented, they will report that person to ICE, and so people are less likely to report crimes that happen to them. And Hans, I know it varies from county to county, but the story in the Journal Sentinel points out that some sheriffs are hearing from farmers and others saying, don't be doing this. I got hard workers here. They're doing their best. They're supporting families. Don't be going along with the political games of demonizing people with darker colored skin when there could be other ways to use your resources. I'm guessing you have similar thoughts on that, Bill.
Yeah, well, this irritates me on a number of levels. You know, I was on the county board in Lincoln County for 10 years, and the last thing any county needs is another unfunded mandate, for starters. And this is basically, you know, Republicans in Madison actively, I don't want to use the word extortion, but I mean, we're getting close right here, right? When they're saying, okay, this is what you're going to do, and otherwise we're going to take away funding. Well, how dare they? How dare they is what I say. Because, you know, this the Republicans used to be the party of local control. Well, that's gone completely down the crapper because they have no interest in local control at all. And now, you know, to have Wisconsin legislators basically do the bidding of their national party is just ridiculous. I mean, are these people not even Wisconsinites anymore? And then, you know, getting back to the root cause of this whole thing to begin with is it's this manufactured nonsense about, you know, immigrants, you know, committing crimes at a higher rate than anyone else. That's blatantly false. It's a lie. And so this whole deportation thing has been based on a great big fat lie right from the get go. And that's what's so frustrating is that we're creating public policy based on a falsehood that doesn't exist to begin with.
Right. And just basing it all on racial profiling and other things that we don't have time to get into right now, but there are very dark places in some people's souls. Hans Breitenmoser, safe travels to you. Thanks for jumping on the line with us today.
Yep, no problem.
All right, when we come back.
For me one day when I'm laying on feet.
There you go. You hear that, Dan? You're on notice. Chad Holmes is next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
The Chad Holmes Show is coming up shortly here on 98.9 WXCO, or as Tony puts it on YouTube, Chad Wassum in Wausau. Chad, how are you?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Tony also writes in on YouTube, Hans is the best. Great conversation about sheriffs and local control. Had no idea this was happening today in Madison, but it is. That's what's happening at the State Assembly here. So, you can listen to Chad's show on the Civic Media app as well. Head to civicmedia.us to learn more. If I could continue the conversation just briefly with you, Chad, just to point out that in our story, we bring up the story that will go up on our website later today once the Assembly passes this bill, as we expect they will. We note a couple of stories here that have been told by USA Today and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. There was Ma Yang, a Milwaukee area mother of five, who came to this country as a baby with her Hmong refugee parents. She was detained earlier this month and flown to Laos, a country she has never lived in, and she does not speak the language. And she is there without money and without the insulin she needs to treat her diabetes. Then there's Camila Munoz, a college student from Peru, came to Wisconsin Dells on a work study visa, stayed past her visa expiration date due to the COVID pandemic. She was working, picking up towels at a water park, and working in food service. She later met and married a local and was taking steps to become a U.S. citizen, but it's not final yet. And coming back from their honeymoon last month, she was detained at an airport and is now in a detention center in Louisiana that costs taxpayers hundreds of dollars a day per person. For folks that think, oh, you know, things aren't going to be that bad, it is that bad for these folks and more right here in Wisconsin, and these stories are only going to grow, Chad. I just wonder if the compassion for these folks is going to grow.
Compassion is a good word that needs to be put out there because the cruelty seems to be the point. And they get a they get their jollies out of number one doing it, and number two then getting away with avoiding court orders that say stop it.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that they handled the whole El Salvadoran situation over the weekend. Oh, whoopsie. I mean, at what point does somebody say, step up and say, you can't do this? Because apparently a weakness in our system is showing up where we've had up to this point. Even Nixon would be upset when the courts would say, you have to give up the tapes. But ultimately he did so.
Because he didn't say, yeah, he didn't say to the judge, you and what army, you know? And so let's try to game this out, because it could happen yet this week where the judge in this particular case says, well, I have no choice but to hold so-and-so in contempt. It might be the lawyers. It might be some administration official. And this judge orders those folks into custody, for example, for failing to follow a court order. You have to send a message. What does Trump do then? Immediately pardon these people? Does Trump, you know, try to send soldiers to a courthouse to prevent somebody from being taken into custody because they ignored his court order? And again, I know it all sounds alarmist. I'm just saying, we could see that kind of a crisis yet this week with the lawlessness of this administration.
Well, a year ago, the Supreme Court said that he was not going to be held criminally liable, anything that he does in office with his official duties. That leaves it up to folks in the other branches to be the ones that are trying to be equal within our government. And unfortunately, at this point, we don't see much of that. From obviously both the Senate and the House under Republican control, but at the same time, it does not appear that the Democrats have the stomach to push any kind of, guardrails against Donald Trump and his administration. And the court says we see again so much of what they're able to do depends on the other branches respecting their authority within our system of government. And unfortunately, we've seen over the years that Donald Trump and the people around Donald Trump, I think, you know, we talk about Donald Trump all the time. It's really the people around Donald Trump that are, I think, as dangerous as anybody that we've ever seen in this country, because Trump spent so much time golfing these days that I think that the keys to the store have been left with some very dangerous people like Stephen Miller.
Yeah. A little bit closer to home in terms of compassion for folks. And I have no idea your thoughts on Shireen Seward from the Wausau Pilot and Review. But I read part of her column on Friday's show about taking her first days off in like 8 years. And I know in the early days, at least, if not still now, she wasn't the biggest fan of Up North News. But I completely understood her point about finally taking some days off because of how toxic the comments have become about journalists trying to do their job. And folks, if this is happening in sleepy little Wausau, Wisconsin, you know, no place is safe from this kind of toxic language.
And the thing about it is, again, it feels like the Pandora's box has been opened up with this. And I have no doubt what she has seen has been awful. To be honest with you, I've been getting a few of those myself recently. I just think that there is a part of the community right now that is going after anybody that is a little bit outside what they consider their mainstream. And I think we're seeing in this era that you're either for us or you're against us. There's no real gray area that if you ever say anything bad about Dear Leader Don or Dear Leader Doug in this community
or Derek in this one where you get called a clown, you know,
I mean, it really is that if you step outside what they feel like you should be saying, they're not afraid to come at you and come at you very, very hard.
Exactly. Well, look, you've hacked off a mayor. I upped you. I've done a congressman. Ball's in your court, buddy. Go after Ron Johnson. Let's see what happens.
Tiffany's going after. I mean, he's meeting with some agreement today, and he refuses to have open meetings with the constituents. So it's the same all over the place right now.
You want to see my shocked face on that? Chad Holmes is up next on 98.9 WXCO. Thanks, sir. Have a great day. Greg's back in 2 hours for Matt Nair on Air. Tune in for that as well on the Civic Media Radio Network or on the Civic Media app. Have a great Tuesday, everybody. I'm Pat Kreitlow here in Chippewa Falls. We'll see you tomorrow morning up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.